want your soul.
You'll change your mind when you grow up. Everyone always told me whenever I said I didn't want any kids. You usually hear that kind of thing from your own parents, right? Well, not me. My folks never once told me anything about having children or changing my mind. On the rare occasions when the topic was brought up, and I'd voice my contempt towards little brats running around the house, taking up my free time, they'd go unusually quiet. I honestly didn't think I ever would change my mind, and I expected my parents to start bothering me about it when I became an adult. But my mid-20s had gone by, and then the late-20s, and then the early-30s. I never really gave it much thought and just figured I had extremely supportive parents. That was until I got married at the age of 34 and decided to break the news about my wife Julia being pregnant. My mother's smile contorted and she hastily covered her mouth with her hands, while my father simply stared blankly with an expressionless face. My mother ran out of the room as if she was about to vomit. "Is she okay?" I asked my dad, obviously baffled by the reaction at such big news. Yeah, she'll be fine. Congrats. About the baby, I mean. That's great news." He forced a smile. As he reached for his glass of juice on the table, he accidentally knocked it over, his hands visibly trembling. "Oh, now I've gone and done it. Oh boy, your mom is going to kill me," he chuckled awkwardly. "I'll go get something to clean this up." He stood up and practically ran out of the room, leaving Julie and I in utter silence. "What was that about?" she asked. I could tell by her face that she felt horrible, especially since she was really good with my mom and this sort of reaction was unexpected from her. "Oh, you know, this is big news for them." "Well, I thought they'd be happy." "Well, they would. They are. Look, I'll go check on them, okay?" I got up and went upstairs and called out to my parents, but they didn't respond. It wasn't until I was almost at the top of the stairs that I heard two voices, one distinctly sobbing, and the other saying something in a hushed tone. As I got closer to the bathroom, it became clear that my mom was crying, while my dad was trying to soothe her quietly, shushing her along the way. "Mom?" I asked as I peeked inside the bathroom. My mom sat on the toilet seat, her face buried in her hands, her body spasming up and down from crying. My dad was on his knees, gently stroking her shoulder. When he heard me, he jerked his head towards me and leaned on the bathtub, standing up with some difficulty. "Dad, what's going on?" I'd never seen my mom like this. Did she hate the notion of Julia bearing my children this much? "Kevin, I think you better go now. Your mom's not feeling well," my dad said as he stepped forward, forcefully making me exit the bathroom. He closed the door behind him, muffling my mother's cries. "Dad, what's going on here? What's wrong with Mom? Is she okay?" Yeah, she's fine. She's just a little shocked, but she's happy for you too." "Well, it don't look like it." "Trust me, she is. Well, go home. I'll call you later." Before I could say anything else, he went back inside the bathroom and shut the door in my face. Dumbfounded, I knew there was no point in pushing the situation any further, so I told Julia that my mother was feeling sick. She didn't buy it, of course, and got angry, saying that my mom could have reacted differently. She was right, and I myself was angry at my parents for this outburst, but at the same time, I hoped they wouldn't make me pick sides. We drove home, and it wasn't until a few hours later that my dad sent me a text. "We need to talk. Stop by around 3 p.m. tomorrow. Alone," it said. "This can't be good," I thought to myself, but decided to humor him. I had already made my decision about the approach I planned on taking with him. The more I thought about it, the angrier I got. This was my wife, goddammit. I wouldn't let them insult her like that, no matter what the reason was. The next day, I went back to my parents' place and my dad opened the door. He smiled when he saw me, looking a lot less distressed than yesterday. "Come on in, Kevin," he gestured, and I got in without a word. "Is Mom here?" I asked as I hung my jacket on the coat hanger. No, I chose a time when she wasn't home, so that we could have some privacy," he said as we sat in the living room. He sat in his sofa, the same one he's been using for the past 20 years, and I stared at him, across the room from the couch. The only thing separating us was the coffee table. "So," he pursed his lips, tapping nervously on the sofa armrest. "How's Julia?" "Dad." "What's this all about?" I sternly said. "I thought you and Mom liked Julia. Look, if you have a problem with the two of us having a kid, then you're just going to have to get used to it, because I don't intend to..." "This has nothing to do with her, Kevin," he interrupted me. "I called you here because I want to tell you a story." He scratched his chin, looking nowhere in particular. It looked like he was trying to remember something. I couldn't possibly tell what kind of point his story would have or what importance it held that he had to schedule a private meeting for the two of us. But I decided to save my comments until he said his part. "Well, it all started a long time ago." He awkwardly looked at me and then down at the coffee table. He took a sip of his water, his hands trembling again, and I wasn't sure if it was from him being nervous or from old age. It took everything within me not to ask him what started. He leaned back in his sofa and looked at me with a reinvigorated gaze before continuing. "Your great-grandfather was only 23 years old back then. He was already dating his wife-to-be, and they were visiting the town's fair. It was a nice summer day, according to the story he told your grandfather. And he was just done winning a prize for your great-grandmother in a shooting game. The two of them walked around looking for interesting places to stop at, when they saw a peculiar-looking tent. There was a sign in front that said fortune-telling, and your great-grandmother was more than enthused by the idea of seeing what her future entailed. They entered the tent, which seemed to be ominously dark, despite the daylight that should have glared in through the entrance. Inside was a gypsy lady, with your typical stereotype red bandana over the head, lots of jewelry, big round earrings, etc. She sat by a small round table, which had a crystal ball in the center of it. She pleasantly welcomed your great-grandparents and asked them if they were interested in knowing their own future for a mere nickel. Your great-grandfather decided to go first, thinking that there's nothing to lose. He sat by the table and the gypsy lady immediately clasped her hands around the ball, which suddenly seemed to emanate a bright light which illuminated the fortune teller's face, revealing all the blemishes under it. She spoke vaguely of the future to come, talking about a wedding between your great-grandparents and potential job opportunities. All in all, she didn't give any mind-blowing insight about his future, and apparently, he didn't take that too well, accusing her of being a scammer. She proclaimed that she fairly told what she saw in the crystal ball, and put her hand forward, demanding the nickel. Your great-grandfather refused, ready to leave the tent. The gypsy lady stared at him in silence, no visible emotions on her face. Suddenly, she calmly and quietly started to chant something in an unfamiliar language, which he assumed was Romani. He didn't know what her words meant, but all he did know was that he suddenly felt the shiver run down his spine, and the air in the room changed drastically, becoming significantly colder than the summer day should have allowed. She proceeded to hum a certain melody, even going so far as to remove her bandana, cut a piece of her hair, and blow it towards your great-grandfather. More weirded out than scared, your great-grandparents left the place and tried to have fun for the remaining time at the fair. Less than a year later, they got married, and your great-grandmother gave birth to your grandfather, Jacob. Jacob was a sickly boy of poor physical condition, and unable to follow up with his peers. He was diagnosed with a rare disease at the age of 6, and it was estimated by the doctors that he would not live past 12. Your great-grandparents were devastated, of course, but by the time Jacob reached the age of 8, he got a younger sister. As soon as she was born, Jacob miraculously recovered. The doctors couldn't explain it and were baffled by his case, calling him a miracle. He lived a long life and died peacefully. His sister, however, was not so lucky. He leaned back and shifted in his seat uncomfortably, grimacing as he did so. "Do you need to take a break?" I asked him. I knew he had a really bad back from years of labor and couldn't sit for too long. As eager as I was to hear the rest of the story, I also didn't want him to go through any physical pain to do it. No, I'm good. I need to finish telling you this. It's very important." He cleared his throat and looked back at me with concern before continuing. "So as I was saying, your grandpa Jacob lived out the rest of his life healthily. His sister's birth coincided with his miraculous recovery. However, she didn't live past the age of 21. Your grandpa had your Uncle Scott when he was 28, and his sister had started to finally feel better around that time, but it was too late by then. Her disease had progressed too far, and despite showing signs of recovery, she died less than a year later. Right from birth, your Uncle Scott was as sick as his father was before him, only suddenly recovering when I was born. I took over the curse for some time, while Scott grew up to be healthy. I don't remember this because I was still a toddler, but your grandpa swears there were strange occurrences in the house around that time. He said he'd put me in my cradle, only to find me in suspicious places, like the top of the wardrobe out in the hallway, despite the doors being closed and the knob too high for me to reach. Sounds like there could be a logical explanation, right? Well, there were more strange things happening as well. For instance, one time he said he approached my bedroom, and as he did, he heard someone in there with me, whispering something that sounded like chanting in an unfamiliar language. It hadn't even hit him until he remembered the story of the gypsy lady that his father had told him about years prior to that. He said I giggled at it, and every time I'd do it louder, there was a soft shh coming from the room. He knew it wasn't your grandma because she had left to visit her parents, but when he opened the door, he found no one inside, and I stood in my cradle, seemingly jerking my gaze away from whatever I was fixated on previously to look back at my dad. He said that he saw my eyes darting around the room, as if looking for something. It was around this time that your grandpa Jacob started to suspect that the gypsy that his father told him about may have been more serious in her curse than we had originally thought. He hired all sorts of priests, black magic experts, voodoo experts, and so on, and none of them stayed in the house for too long, and they never wanted to talk about what they saw, only saying that they couldn't help him. At this point, my dad stood up and went to one of the drawers behind the sofa. He opened it and continued speaking as he rummaged through it. Other things that happened were with photos. He'd often take photos of me, and at first, everything seemed okay. But as he looked closer, there was something wrong with the pictures. He continued rummaging in silence, so I figured it was my time to interject. "Well, come on, Dad. I mean, all of this is superstition, right? Just a streak of bad luck. And the photos could have had a smudge or something on them." He ignored my remark and continued looking through the drawer with loud shuffling noises until he finally found what he was looking for. He closed the drawer and turned back around, holding a number of old photos in his hand. They trembled at the edges like leaves on wind as he sat down and flipped through them. He picked out one of the photos and put it in his lap. "Maybe so, but I'll let you decide for yourself." He leaned forward and neatly placed the other photos on the coffee table. He leaned back in his chair and silently gestured for me to take them. I did as he asked and observed the pictures closer. "Well, what do you see?" he asked. The first picture at the front was black and white, of my dad as a baby, sitting in pajamas next to a set of toys in what looked like a living room, and smiling a toothless grin at the camera. I squinted, looking at the background of the picture, and when I saw nothing, I tried to focus on the obvious, my dad's face and the toys around him. "Nothing. I don't see nothing, Dad." I shook my head. "Okay, what about the next one?" I flipped the picture, placing it at the back, and the next picture was of my grandma cradling my dad as a baby in her arms in the bedroom. My dad seemed to be sleeping in the picture, while my mom looked down at him with a smile. "Anything in that one?" I looked around at the picture but found nothing suspicious. No, there was something, some kind of shadow in the corner of the room. But it could have been anything. Although the shape of the shadow looked human, stretched thinly around the corners of the wall and floor. It was hard to tell, though, due to the lack of colors in the photo. "Well, there's something here, but I mean, that could be anything, really." "Okay, then look at the next one," my dad said sternly now. I flipped and stared at the next picture. It was of my dad as a toddler. He was seated at a table with a big birthday cake in front of him. He looked shriveled and sick, but despite that, he was staring at the camera as photogenically as in the first photo, with a big goofy smile. I immediately focused on the background of the picture instead of the things in the center, and sure enough, I saw something. A tall, thin shadow loomed in the background ominously, maybe 2 steps behind my dad. I couldn't discern any other prominent features, save for the fact that the shape of it looked undoubtedly humanoid, despite the thin look. I couldn't tell for sure, though, but it looked like the shadow was facing my dad while he unsuspectingly smiled at the camera. Although I wasn't 100% convinced that this was some paranormal occurrence, it sent a shiver running down my spine. I placed the picture at the back and looked at the next one. It was of my grandpa and my dad when he was around 5, sitting by a table and drawing something with crayons. My dad was smiling at the camera, despite looking sicker and paler than before, while my grandpa curiously pointed at something on his drawing. Clear as day, standing right over their shoulders, was the same thin shadow from before. It seemed to be hunched over and holding my dad gently by his shoulders, just enough to see its sharp fingertips overlapping with my dad's clothes. Enough for me to be convinced this time that this was no faulty camera. Looking up towards where the shadow's face would have been, I also saw what looked like a pair of eyes, like 2 tiny clouds of smoke, devoid of any features that human eyes normally had. I hastily placed the picture at the back and looked at the next one. My dad was in the next picture as well, in his teen years, and he looked just as sick as before, sitting up in his bed. Despite that, a smile was strewn across his face as he looked at the camera. A big portion of the picture was black, taken over by the same shadow from the previous photographs. It had its thin arms over my dad's shoulders and was looking directly at the camera this time. I saw its cloudy eyes more clearly now, gray and penetrating with malice. But a little lower, there was a thinly curved slit. It looked like the shadow was smiling. I suddenly became aware of how fast my heart was beating, so much that I could feel it thumping upon my chest. I quickly placed the picture at the back and looked at the only remaining one. I braced myself to see something even more horrifying here, but that never came. I stared at a photo of my dad, still in his teen years, holding a baby, and next to him was Uncle Scott. They both faced the camera with eager smiles while the baby in my dad's arms slept. I squinted, darting my eyes around the corners of the picture, and then I saw it. The shadow, all the way in the back, barely visible, 2 cloudy dots as eyes. And they were unmistakably staring in the direction of the baby. "Well?" my dad asked finally, staring at me unblinkingly with wide eyes. "What the fuck is this?" I asked with a quivering voice. As soon as Scott had his daughter, I got better. His daughter died very early on, though, and there were no more strange occurrences, at least for a while. We had started to hope that the curse was over, but then you were born. I opened my mouth to say something, but I didn't know what to say. I placed the photos awkwardly back on the coffee table and spoke up. Well, I was never sick. My dad stared down at the coffee table, and I could see tears welling up in his eyes. He didn't even try to hide it. No, you weren't. But your brother was. I widened my eyes, trying to speak, but only an inaudible gasp left my mouth. What brother, Dad? My dad sniffled. Dad, what brother? His eyes now red, as he handed me the final photo with a trembling hand. I grabbed it feverishly, glancing at it. There were two newborn babies on it in a hospital nursery. They were seemingly sleeping peacefully in cribs side by side. I had to know. I just had to, my dad said, sobbing. As soon as you and your brother were delivered, I had to take a picture to see if the shadow would be back. And my suspicions were confirmed when I took that picture. I glanced at the photo again, looking towards the corner of the room, and there it was. Despite light illuminating the entire room, the shadow stood in the corner, its malicious gaze focused on one of the babies in the crib. Your brother was born 12 minutes after you. You grew up to be healthy, but your brother, he died less than a year later. Tears were welling up in my eyes now. He buried his face in his hands and wept violently for a while. All I could do was stare at the picture, at the insidious shadow that had taken my brother away from me, without me ever even getting to know him. My dad regained his composure and finally spoke up. I tried to stop it. I talked with all sorts of experts, but when everything rational failed, I found one gypsy fortune teller to help me. I was desperate and told her I'd pay her as much as she wanted as long as she took off the curse. She confirmed that this was some sort of black magic and that whatever that shadow is, it was summoned from another world by the fortune teller that your great-grandfather refused to pay. Okay, so did she manage to break the curse? It's not that simple. Black magic can't be dispelled by anyone but the person who placed the spell. And the gypsy fortune teller that cursed our family has been dead for years. The shadow always seems to latch on to the youngest one in our family, and the only way it ever leaves them alone is by latching onto a new one, a newborn. However, if the family member that it's latched onto dies, then the evil spirit goes dormant. For a while. When your Uncle Scott's daughter died, everything was fine for years, and then your mom and I had twins, and it came back. After it finished off your poor brother, everything went back to normal, and it's dormant right now. But once you have your child, it'll come back, Kevin, and every generation, it gets stronger. He sniffled and wiped his tears as I continued staring at the picture of myself and my brother in the nursery. Well, how do we stop it then? And he shook his head. You can't. The gypsy woman that I talked to said that this spirit will never leave until the last member of our family dies. That's the only way to banish it back to wherever it came from. He exhaled deeply, became calm again, and continued. Whether you want to have a child is your own choice, but if you do, you have to know that you're putting it in danger. Your Uncle Scott had no other children, so you're the last surviving descendant of our family, and the spirit will latch onto your child without a doubt. I didn't say anything. I was totally stunned. A moment later, my phone vibrated, and when I looked at it, I saw a message from Julia asking me where I was. Dad, I'm going to have to go now. I have things I have to take care of. Yeah, I understand. I know this is a lot to take in, but I want you to think about everything I told you. I know you're not superstitious, Kevin, but I implore you to think about this. I nodded and left. I thought about it the whole time on my drive back home. Could there really be some malevolent spirit haunting our family, whose only purpose was to feed off its newborns? It sounded ridiculous. It couldn't possibly be true. After a little while, I dismissed it and decided to have a relaxing dinner with Julia. I couldn't get rid of the nagging feeling, though, so I took out my phone and told Julia to smile. "Hey, stop it," she smiled at the camera. My flash temporarily blinded her and I apologized. I entered my phone's gallery and looked at the picture I took, but I didn't focus on Julia. "How do I look, honey?" she asked. I zoomed in at the corner behind her. It may have been my imagination, but behind Julia, in the corner of the room, right next to the curtains, looked like there was a very thin, very tall shadow stretched across the wall, with two tiny cloudy dots for what looked like eyes. And they were staring directly at her.